Comes the focus for the latest death in police custody, 100 marchers descend on the nation's capital to stop police violence and murder. Coming up next. Welcome to Thursday's Community Watch and Comment, the on-the-ground edition for April 23rd, 2015 on WPFW Washington, 89.3, your station for jazz and justice in the nation's capital. I'm Esther Averam. And as always, we have a lot for you in this less than an hour, starting with what happened here on Tuesday in D.C., the 250-mile March to Justice, which kicked off last week from New York City with 100 activist marchers, arrived in Baltimore on Saturday and arrived in D.C. on Tuesday, ending with a rally on the West Lawn of the Capitol. We'll hear voices from the marchers as well as from legislators, artists, and families of those killed by police and other activists who stood in solidarity with them at the Capitol. We have a lot to bring to you today, so let's go right to voices from the Capitol, and then in the second half, speak live with one of the three women who spearheaded the march and take your calls. Let's start with the West Lawn of the Capitol, where the 250-mile march ended.
Damien, Paul, Darius, Juliet, keep going, I'm not done. Bruce, Raphael, Alex, Jordan, Vincent, Malik, Tyler, Wadir, Minister Ali, Barry, Lisa, Tim, Fletcher, Deshaun. Keep going, I got like 20 more names. So one thing that's very special about the March to Justice and the Justice League NYC is that we are a strategic revolution. We are a movement that understands that there has to be an inside strategy and an outside strategy. We also understand that we need to be asking and demanding for things, and we need to have an agenda. We can't be on the streets crying about our pain without asking for solutions and creating those solutions. And we also know that we got friends on the inside. They might be the minority, but they have loud voices, and it is up to us to create a movement to support them to continue to fight for us. So I want to bring up right now Congressman Charlie Rangel from New York City, Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee, who's a ranking member of the Crime Subcommittee, House Judiciary, the only woman to ever have that position. I want to bring up Congresswoman Barbara Lee, and it is my privilege and honor to bring up the only two Muslim representatives in the U.S. House Congress, Congressman Keith Ellison and Congressman Andre Carson.
One day you should be able to tell your kids and your grandkids that you were one that marched from the city of New York, the streets of Harlem and Bedford-Stuy, and you came to your nation's capital when people were acting like they did not know what was going on in this country. And because of people like you, we got the people, we woke them up, we shook them up, and we told them that we didn't march for ourselves. We marched to save this society. God bless you. March on. Right on. Don't give up. Don't give out. And God's sake, don't give in.
What you are doing by standing under this sun and looking at the United States Capitol, you are asking people to shed their, how should I say it, their special interest armor of Republicans or Democrats or independence or other, and to be able to say, do you deserve justice? I think you do. So let me say to you, tomorrow we will be introducing again the Interracial Profiling Act to stop bothering folks because of you. Just about 48 hours ago or 3 days ago, We introduced something called the Cadet Act, which is to gather data which people do not have, police do not have, of all of the shootings in America involving law enforcement, and get the race, the gender, the age, the location, so that we can put it forward. And the same thing if civilians are engaged with police officers. Let me be very clear. You are law-abiding. You have marched these miles in a law-abiding, peaceful protest. You are in the vein of Gandhi and Martin King. May not know it, but you took your souls and you came here. And so we've introduced the legislation that will tell the naysayers and the persons who are afraid to go forward and deal with this in a scientific way. Look at the numbers. Have you met the Jersey 4 20 years ago shot on I-95? Look at the numbers. So let me close by saying we also recognize that you've got to build trust. You've got to have law enforcement accountability and retraining, and we're writing that kind of legislation. And the first one that was being introduced is a build trust bill. Build trust, B-U-I-L-D, not build it, but build trust. And that means that I cannot use you or you or you to make sure that I have money in my bank of my city, my village, my borough. I cannot stop you just to get a dime out of you. I cannot stop you just to be able to pay my bills. I must be able to build the trust that law enforcement is to protect and serve, and we are law-abiding citizens. I want to help them to understand it. I want to help them to go home to their families, but I want to lay down for justice for each and every one of you. This is what we're dealing with. Thank you for being here. I want you to load up around those of us who serve on the Judiciary Committee. And I just want to make mention of the outstanding members of Congress that come from New York. Hakeem Jeffries is a member of the Judiciary Committee. Greg Meeks has been fighting for you. And Yvette Clark has been fighting for you, joining their leader, Charlie Rangel. And they have all been coming to the Judiciary Committee demanding justice for all of you. Justice! 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 You will have it, and we will overcome.
I'm Barbara Lee. I come from Oakland, California, the home of the Black Panther Party. We're in the 60s and the 70s. We took on police brutality and police misconduct in a big, big way. And I want you to know, I am so proud of what you are doing today. Because the work of the 60s and the 70s not only is completed for that day, but it continues for this day. And you are putting the street heat on. You are showing that the right to petition your government is still alive and well in America. So thank you, my brothers and sisters, for being here. Thank you for being here. I also come from the home of our beloved fallen brother, Oscar Grant. And so you know what's going on in Oakland, California. It's the same thing that's going on in New York. It's the same thing that's going on everywhere in our country. And the only way that we will see the change that we deserve is through what you are doing. It's through the street heat. As Congressman Rangel mentioned, our great leader who's been here in Congress and has seen many, many movements, he knows that marches and rallies and the street heat is the only thing that's going to make us here in this Congress move and change. Yeah. It's you that's going to make the change that we want to see. It's you. And so thank you so much for being here. Thank you. Thank you. Congresswoman Jackson Lee laid out where all the bills, and I want to add to that, we've got to stop militarizing law enforcement and get these war weapons off of the streets of America. Off the streets of America. And we're going to do that with your help. So finally, in closing, let me just say two things. I got involved in politics as a result of the Black Panther Party and Congresswoman Shirley Chisholm from Brooklyn. And I was taught early on, and I worked for Ron Delms for many years, but you know what? I was taught early on what our great warrior and peace justice, Dr. Martin Luther King, told us early on, and that is, peace is not just the absence of tension, but it is the presence of justice. So thank you, Justice Champions. Thank you for being here today. God bless you.
You're listening to Thursday's Community Watch and Comment, the On the Ground edition, and you just heard voices from the March to Justice rally on Capitol Hill, held after 100 marches. Sometimes there were more than 100, had walked 250 miles from New York City to launch a mass movement to end police violence and murder. After this brief break, we'll hear more voices, including from family members of those slain by police.
Introduce to you Congressman John Lewis.
I must tell you that it is wonderful to see each and every one of you here. Thank you for moving your feet. Thank you for marching from New York to Washington, D.C. Many, many years ago, when I had all of my hair and a few pounds lighter, yes, I marched on Washington with others, with organized labor, with civil rights leaders, 23 years old. 2 years later, we marched from Selma to Montgomery. We were beaten, tear gassed, trampled by horses, but we never gave up. We never gave in. You must never, ever give up or give in. You must keep your faith and keep moving your feet and putting your bodies on the line. Too many lives have been lost. How many more? No more. We must stand up, and speak out and make some noise. And to those of us in the Congress will listen. And officials all around America will listen, and people will get in the way. I tell you, what's happening in America? What is happening? Are we coming again to the seventh season? As a nation and as a people, we can do better. We must send the strongest possible message. It's too many killings. We're losing too many young men.
And women.
That's not good for the future of our nation, for the future of all of us as people. We're black, we're white, we're Latino, we're Asian American, we're Native American. We all live in the same house. We are one family. We are brothers and sisters. Dr. King said on one occasion, we must learn to live together as brothers and sisters, or we will perish as fools.
Wow.
I was beaten. I was left bloody. on conscience. Had a concussion on that bridge. I thought I was going to die. I thought I saw death. But I'm still here, and I'm a witness that we can do much better. So thank you for marching. Thank you for picking them up and putting them down. Let's continue to walk and work together until we redeem the soul of America. Thank you very much.
Congressman John Lewis, we want you to know that we march in your spirit, we march in your legacy, and we will continue to march. It is because of people like you, so thank you. Next up, I want to bring up one of the marchers that marched all the way from New York City to Washington, D.C. Sisters and brothers, we saw Confederate flags. We had people call us the N-word. We had people blowing smoke at us from their cars in the streets. We didn't see what people saw 50 years ago, but we saw it, sisters and brothers. Racism is real in this country, and we were glad to have that experience to motivate us and remind us why we do this. And I want my brother Darius Gordon, originally from Washington, D.C., where community organizer at Citizen Action of New York.
Good afternoon, everybody. I said good afternoon, everybody. It's wonderful to see all these beautiful faces out here. I just want to say, when we first started, people said, wow, 250 miles. You know, that's crazy. Wow, you can't do it. You know, that's a lot of walking. And just, I want to put something in perspective really quick. Our ancestors, escaping slavery, had to walk way more than 250 miles to get their freedom. And they didn't have these ASICs with the high gel, you know, the high technology. They didn't have that. They had no choice. In order for us to be here talking to you, for me, 25-year-old black man, be able to talk to you right now, they had to suffer and go through that. So I walk in their name. One of our ancestors, Harriet Tubman, she said, General Harriet Tubman, thank you. She said, I freed thousands of slaves, but I would have freed thousands of more if they knew they were enslaved. And it doesn't stop here. This is only the beginning. This is the spark of something great because it is our turn. The torch has been passed to us, and it's our duty to make sure that we continue the fight. So I want to say thank you to everybody here, and I'll give the mic to Linda. Thank you.
Sisters and brothers, there's a reason why we march. And this beautiful young sister right here, old enough to be my daughter, reached out to us on Instagram. Bobby Gross was shot on March 13, 2015 by the DC Metro Police. We don't know exactly what happened. He was in a train station. And this child right here is advocating for justice for her father. And I want you to listen to her. And then when she finishes speaking, I want to show her love and support. And we're going to let her know that we're here to stand with her until she and her family get justice. So please help me welcome Heaven Gross, daughter of Bobby Gross.
Good afternoon. My name is Heaven Gross. I am 11 years old. I am here because my father, Bobby Gross, was killed by a DC police. I want justice for my brother, my unborn brother, my dad, my unborn brother, my mom, and my family. I'm asking for prayer and peace. We want justice. The police are supposed to protect us, but instead they are killing our people. If Black Lives Matter, say this with me. Justice for Bobby Gross. Justice for Bobby Gross. Justice for Bobby Gross. Justice for Bobby Gross. For all of our black strong women and powerful brothers and sisters. Justice for Bobby Gross. Thank you.
When we talk about the family, let me introduce a few other people to you that you need to know. Number one, my sister is here, who represents the family of Emmett Till, Miss Erica Taylor. America is Emmett's cousin. And she runs the Mamie Till Foundation, which is the foundation that his mother, Mamie Till, started. They started for his mother. She runs that and she keeps Emmett Till's name alive. But she also is a part of this family that brings other folks out to get us, people who need to know the pain that those of us are going through who have dealt with this. And I do say us, because we are a family. When one of us is down, all of us are down. And we need to acknowledge that whether or not you've lost someone in your house, if you have children under a certain age and they see this happening on the news over and over again, they are becoming traumatized. That's why you see so many young people taking it to the streets, marching and protesting. It's not because anyone taught them how to be a part of the movement. They don't have a PhD in organizing. They just know that Oscar Grant, Trayvon Martin, Tamir Rice, Rekia Boyd, who we'll talk about in a second, the names, the list, it's too long, and they want it to stop before they become the next hashtag. Now, I want to bring up a family that we just saw yesterday what injustice looks like. 3 years ago, this young woman and her son lost their loved one. This lady lost her daughter because an officer had a gun and shot over his shoulders as if the people in the community did not matter. And we saw yesterday that the courts have said that Rekia Boyd's life does not matter. The officer who shot her was found not guilty of all charges, including reckless endangerment. She was not involved in any crime. There was no reason for the officer to be shooting in her direction. She was shot in her head, she was killed, and there is no justice. And I want to bring to you her brother, who has been the spokesperson for this family, Martinez Sutton, and her mother, Miss Angela Hinton, so that they can talk to you about what it is that they're going through and what they want to see. Martinez? Let's give them a little more love, y'all. They came here. They came all the way from Chicago again to talk to you.
Peace, everybody. Yesterday was mad disrespectful. As we walked into that courthouse, we was met with German shepherds, extra police. And that's when I knew we lost our case. I ain't even walked to the court. We didn't even walk in the courtroom yet. I'm walking around by myself, people on their radios, watching me, looking at me. Like I'm the criminal. I don't have a rap sheet. That's what they want me to have.
Take your time.
This is the first time ever. Ever in my life that I ever felt broken. I've been through a lot. First time I ever felt broken, like I could not protect my little sister. I'm sitting in a courtroom with the murderer of my sister, and he's sitting there with a smirk on his face because he knows he's gonna get out. And the judge tells me, well, tells the family, looks directly at the family and says, if you have emotions, this is not a courtroom for emotions. This is a court of law. So, if you're feeling emotional, you might as well hit the door.
That was the next time I figured we lost this case.
As he started to talk, I thought we had him the entire time, just looking at all the evidence mounting up against this man. I mean, all the evidence pointed to this cop. I figured, how is he gonna get off? And we finally got one. They finally gonna give us one. And they yanked him away. And he had the nerve to say, I told the family, if this what you want, I hope y'all happy with the results. Oh yeah, it was a slap in the face. A slap in the face. And by me being outraged for my mother and my sisters and brothers, you know, I said, what? And that's when they surrounded me and told me to sit down and shut up. And that's when it happened. You're not gonna sit me down and shut me up. It's just like I said before, I was broken, but it's just the support and the love that we get along the way. That's the glue that puts us back together. Anything that's broken can be fixed. No matter how much slack and flack and everything that they give us, anything can be fixed. Let's just keep on marching strong. Y'all just don't know. Every time I see something like this, everybody from different parts of the country coming out to support families in need, it does something to my heart. To me, y'all my family also. But you gotta have love to love us. I just want y'all to know I love y'all back. Peace and love.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Thursday's Community Watch and Comment, the On the Ground edition, and you just heard voices from the finale of the March to Justice from New York to Washington, D.C., which finished with a rally on the West Lawn of the Capitol and brought several members of Congress, including civil rights veteran Representative John Lewis of Georgia, musical artists including Raheem Devon, Jaziri X, and several spoken word artists and TV celebrities, including Yandy Smith of Love and Hip Hop fame. Of course, as they gathered, marchers in Baltimore were protesting and are still protesting today the death of Freddie Gray while in custody of the Baltimore Police Department. When we come back, we'll be joined by one of the three organizers of the March to Justice. So stay with us.
Jay, can we get some music? Let's go. Turn it up. I want everybody to put a fist in the air for all those that we've lost. We got to come together. We got to tell the world like this. Don't let them get away with murder. 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 Look, we gon' thrive in these streets, no longer living on our knees. We better dying on our feet, ready to fight for our life. Just can the Almighty please. Don't let them get away with murder. How many bullets does it take for a cop shoot killer in a set black town? 15, 16, empty the clip, reload and pull the trigger back down. 17, 18, 19, 15, when you hear that rat-a-tat sound. 26, 27, every 20, I would put another body under that ground. Where the governor, he absent, with the prosecutor and the captain. They say the process democratic, but we getting bullets even now we got the ballot. Where's Duncan, where's Huey? Where's Park, where's Zig, where's Suki? Where's Jay, where's Nas, where's Snoopy? Y'all are the police like Boosie, blame Nixon. We still deal with the whole damn system. We still be cops of his henchmen. Left Mike in the street for our definition of a lynching. Cause I ain't come down here, they gonna tell me I need to mind my business. I'm going dead with a bullet in his head. You go to the fence, I'm a goddamn witness. It's war on us, 44's on us, and he's still telling us be peaceful. Every week another black youth murder, and he's still got the nerve for us, we equal. When we stand up and put our hands up, with the Santa protest, we equal.
And welcome back to Thursday's Community Watch and Comment, the On the Ground edition. on WPFW Washington 89.3, your station for jazz and justice in the nation's capital. I'm Esther Avaram, and you were just listening to Jaziri X, who performed on Tuesday on the West Lawn of the Capitol. During the first half of the show, we heard voices from that finale to the March to Justice, which started in New York City and wound up here in Washington, D.C., and finished with that rally on the West Lawn of the Capitol. And it brought out several members of Congress, musical artists, spoken word artists, TV celebrities, and also the organizers, all the marchers who came from New York to D.C. And I'm honored to have one of them with us today, an organizer for the march, an organizer for the March to Justice. She's Linda Sarsour, one of three organizers and leaders of the march. And you actually heard a lot of her on that footage we played in the first half of the show. She's back in New York today, and she joins us on the line. Good morning, Linda.
Good morning.
So you're representing a powerful movement that really shut it down in New York City after the killing of Eric Garner. But on this march, you also connect with so many different cases in so many different cities. There was, I know definitely in Newark and Philadelphia, we heard at the rally on Tuesday, a case in Philadelphia, a young man shot, unarmed man. And then as you rallied in Baltimore last weekend, protests were at the same time springing up around the brutalization and then the death of Freddie Gray in Baltimore. So I wanted to have you talk a little bit about the impact that those experiences had on the marchers to becoming from an experience in New York, but also meeting up with so many more victims and families along the way.
It was a very moving experience for the marchers, and every single day we were reminded why we were marching. So all the pain in the knees, our ankles, I mean, the heat, many of us are sunburned. The pain that we were feeling was not compared to the pain that we saw in the communities that we went through. And on Sunday morning, we were at Empowerment Temple Church in Washington, D.C., at a Sunday service, and heard there that Freddie Gray had died in police custody. And we had a route through Baltimore. We had to be driven back to Baltimore to continue our route to D.C. And our heart told us that we needed to take a detour. So we went to the Western District Police Department and rallied in front of the police department there for Freddie Gray. Community members came out. His brother came to meet us. We made headlines in the front page of the Baltimore Sun, talked to members of Congress, and then members of Congress called for a federal investigation, as well as the six officers involved were suspended. It was an opportunity for us to shed a national light on stories that we don't often hear or only continue to be local stories. Brendan Tate Brown's mother met us in a parking lot. She's from Philadelphia. Her son was shot by the Philadelphia police back in December of 2014. And they didn't even have the courtesy to call the mother to tell her that your son's been killed. She had to learn about it through the radio and then have to call morgues across Philadelphia to look for her fallen son. I mean, this is the kind of issues that we're dealing with, and it was very moving for us to be with these families and to also bring out the family of Rakia Boyd from Chicago. We flew them down to the rally. An injustice like no other, when a woman can be walking down the street with her friend be shot by a police officer, and he couldn't even get charged with something as simple as reckless endangerment. This is the magnitude of what we're dealing with in the pursuit to justice.
We actually just played the comments of her brother, which really, you know, really moved a lot of people on Tuesday, you know, speaking, having just received that verdict. You know, the family, and I think his mother was there. So we just played that right before the break, you know. So the, you know, in addition to connecting with the families and these different experiences in the cities, I know that you also had your own experiences marching. I think we played a clip of you earlier in the show talking about people calling you the N-word. You know, actually, I have to say that when I found out that the march was going through like Rising Sun, Maryland, mm-hmm. and it was going to come down from that area to Baltimore, I was very wary of that. I knew that that's a very heavily Klan-influenced area, and I wanted to you to talk a little bit about the experiences you had on the march, both the good and the bad. I know you talked about being welcomed by churches and mosques and that energy that you received. But on the other hand, in some areas, what you experienced in terms of people really not wishing the march as well.
Absolutely. I mean, before the march even started, before we left Staten Island, I had a gentleman call me from the Maryland area, an elder, a black man, who actually cautioned us and said to me that I know what you're doing and I believe in you, but you have to understand that you are going through dangerous territory. And I told him, I understand what you're saying and I appreciate your call, but I want you to know that this is part of the experience and that those before us risked their lives, and if we have to do that, we will. And we did go through Rising Sun, Maryland, and some parts of Pennsylvania where people called us the N-word. People told us to go get a job. We had people blowing black smoke at us from their cars, exhaust. But we also saw visuals. We saw people proudly waving Confederate flags in front of their homes in the North. This is not the Bible Belt. We weren't in like Alabama or Mississippi. I mean, this is Pennsylvania and parts of Maryland. And for people who are marching with us, I mean, these people understand racism is deeply rooted in this country, but we didn't know it was so explicit that people had no shame, to call people these words, to fly Confederate flags in front of their homes. It was even as deep as a cupcake cart. You're not going to believe this one. There was a cupcake cart. It was a small little vehicle painted in purple that sells cupcakes, and it was spelled cupcake. K for cup, K for cake, K for cart. I mean, this is just how deep this is. I mean, and people were shocked to see this. It was part of the experience. It reminded people what we were fighting against. We were fighting against a system, a racism that's so deeply rooted in our nation and that we haven't been able to address for probably over 450 years. So we valued the fact that it was part of the experience. Like, you needed to remember that this is just such much bigger than a march from New York City to Washington, D.C.
Right. You know, we have a clip of Freddie, the attorney for Freddie Gray's family. And he was speaking to reporters about Baltimore and just, I guess, the history of violence and police violence there. If we have that up, we'll go to that now.
Absolutely. Baltimore has a sorry history of police brutality. And an even sorrier history in terms of a governmental response to police brutality. Typically, the police deny, 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 no matter what the facts are. And it is not unusual for them to promote the police officer even after he's been found guilty of brutality. We had one case, I handled this, where we got a $44 million verdict against the police officer who rammed my client into the brick wall at the back of his holding cell and paralyzed him from the neck down.
Oh, my goodness.
That police officer was promoted to sergeant after the verdict against him. And the city refused to pay and made us appeal at every level. Mm. So we had to go to the Court of Special Appeals, the Court of Appeals. We won in all of the appellate courts, and still they wouldn't pay the verdict. Well, it's a sorry, sorry situation.
So that was the attorney for the family of Freddie Gray. And, he was speaking to CNN at that time. So, you know, if you listen to what he was saying, I wanted to kind of segue into some of the legislation that you all wanted to, are pushing for, that you, were on Capitol Hill yesterday, you know, pushing for legislation to address these issues and this repeated issue of police violence and killing. So I know one is to stop racial profiling. One is to invest in our youth and to, I suppose, like, end the militarization of the police and all these war armaments going to police departments. So can you talk a little bit about how those meetings went and, you know, what your takeaway is right now on where that legislation might go?
So we believe that our started yesterday on Wednesday after the march, which was meeting with members of Congress. We actually started to see the fruit of our labor. Representative John Conyers from the state of Michigan reintroduced the End Racial Profiling Act for us. And what people have to understand is that for us, ending racial profiling is a matter of life and death. Oftentimes, the first interaction that black and brown people have with police is based on racial profiling. So if we can disrupt that, that would be really helpful. And what end racial profiling does is very simple. It requires police departments across the country to provide data to the federal government. If you have a 90% white population district, but 90% of the stops being implemented by the police are of black and brown people, then there's a problem. So the issue that we have is we don't have that information because police departments are not required to provide that data. So that's number one. And what it does is it holds both city, state, and federal law enforcement accountable that if they are found to be racial profiling, that they would then be sanctioned from some funding and federal funding. So police departments, it helps with transparency and accountability, which we hope can bring some alleviation. At the end of the day, if it was our hope, we would create a bill that says Stop Killing Black and Brown People Act. That's really what the overall goal is. But unfortunately, we have to use these pieces of legislation and piecemeal some alleviation of the pain and suffering that we're seeing across the country in every corner of this country. As a matter of fact, Common, the hip-hop artist, tweeted, every town has a Michael Brown. And we saw that in every single town that we stopped. It was not a town where there wasn't a family, there wasn't someone that came and told us about a story of someone who was killed by police violence. Militarization of police, we saw what happened in Ferguson. We see what happens to us in New York City. The fact that law enforcement agencies, local law enforcement, they believe that they need to have heavy artillery, AK-47s, tear gas tanks. We don't believe that's necessary. Leave that to the feds. Leave that to the National Guard. And the last one is the Juvenile Justice Delinquency Prevention Act, which is about disrupting the school-to-prison pipeline. It holds city and state accountable to how they interact with young people in the juvenile justice system. The fact that we still have 16, 17-year-olds that can be given life without parole in prison. The fact that their opportunities are taken away from them, that they're kind of, you stop their life moving forward and all the educational opportunities that come to them. We're saying invest in these communities, put jobs in these communities, put prevention programs in this community, leadership development programs, and stop blaming our young people for going down the wrong path. And I will tell you about Western Baltimore, where Freddie Gray grew up. I mean, I'm Arab American, Palestinian American, and have family who live under military occupation in Palestine. And I swear to you, in parts of Western District of Baltimore, I felt like I was walking through occupied land, houses blown out, entire street strips where houses were abandoned, schools with windows blown out. And I asked somebody what this beautiful building was, and they said it was a school. But the fact that there are young people in a place like Western District of Baltimore who are walking around in communities like this, that community is telling them they don't matter. Their government, local government, is telling them we are not investing in your community because you don't matter. So what do you expect a young person who goes to a school whose windows are boarded up, right? That's the school that they go to every morning. And I think it's the issue is that sometimes when our kids are getting into places where they don't need to be getting to, and that's obviously not the narrative and not the story, it's because their communities are not set up for them to succeed, and that's what we saw in places like Western District of Baltimore.
Okay, so who are the champions for your legislation? I know we heard from some of them at the rally on Tuesday. We played some of them earlier in the show. Who is kind of shepherding the legislation, and how can listeners get on board, provide support, you know, sign a petition, or what can we do to help push that legislation?
Absolutely. I mean, just stay connected to us at march2justice.com. We'll be putting out more information about how to support. But we have champions of the Congressional Black Caucus. We have historical, legendary civil rights activists who are inside government, including Congressman John Lewis, Congressman John Conyers. We have rock stars from New York City, Hakeem Jeffries, Yvette Clark, two Muslim members of the House, Andre Carson from Indiana, Keith Ellison from Minneapolis. I mean, we just have so many champions. Hank Johnson is the co-sponsor of the Stop Militarization of Law Enforcement bill. I mean, we just have Sheila Jackson Lee, Barbara Lee, Charlie Rangel. I mean, there are a lot of champions for us. What we ask people to do, call your member of Congress and tell them, are you signed on to the End Racial Profiling Act? It's a very basic legislation that just says, don't profile people, go after people based on lead, based on suspicion of criminal activity, and not based on people's race, ethnicity, national origin, religion, or sexual orientation. If you can call your member in Congress and make sure they're signed on to End Racial Profiling Act, that's a start for us to move forward. And again, for us as New Yorkers, many of us came from New York, our fight continues. Our fight, we're in New York right now, and our fight is back in New York with our governor, with our state legislator. New York is only one of two states that prosecute 16-year-olds as adults, but we have 16-year-olds that can be sent to Rikers Island and beyond in general population and even going to maximum security. And that's only two states in this country. So we have a lot of work to do here in the state of New York. That's another fight we have. And connecting Rekia Boyd's family with local organizers and making sure that the mom has that support network that she believes she does not have right now. This is some of the work that we'll be doing across the country. But legislative asks are very important to us. We are a group that understands that we have to work on the inside and the outside, that we cannot continue to talk about our pain. We know what the problem is, but we need to be a solution-based movement. And this is what the Justice League is doing. This is what our partners are doing, and those who support us understand that we are protesters with a purpose. That's what Martin Luther King did, and that's what others did before us, and that's what we're continuing to do.
You know, I know in Chicago there are some really powerful activists who have actually gone internationally, gone to the UN, and basically talked about human rights violations, this police violence, these police killings being a matter of human rights and their human rights being violated, like on an international level, based on international law. And does the Justice League plan on taking any of those types of steps or connecting with those organizations going to the UN?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that there are different communities and different organizers and organizations that play different roles. We know the Dream Defenders from Florida have also went out to Geneva and others. And I think for us, we absolutely believe that police violence in the United States is a human rights issue. And working with those people and providing them the stories and the ammunition that they need to tell these stories internationally. We're very focused on kind of domestic legislative fixes here, working with families, ensuring that they have support networks, telling the stories, but also creating what we're doing also that I think is different is we're making the movement cool. And I know that sounds shallow, but really being able to engage pop culture, engage hip-hop artists, engage actors who really, to me, is their responsibility to use their platform. We had Jesse Smollett from Empire join us, Danny Glover. We worked with Jesse Williams in the past, Harry Belafonte is our mentor and has been supporting us from the beginning. And Common has spoken at press conference with us, including Nas. We've worked with basketball players who wore I Can't Breathe shirts to kind of send a message out there that this movement is not just in these local communities. This movement is everyone. And that's the kind of work that we'll continue to do to allow artists to continue to uplift the voices of their communities, because people like Common, Jesse Williams and others, they come from these communities. They're black men. They need to understand that they need to use their platform. And they've been very welcoming to our message and kind of uplifting the young people in our movement. So that's going to be, it's all continued work. Our work just started. But the momentum is big, and I'm very proud to be part of this movement.
You know, speaking of the larger movement, I want you to talk to me a little bit about Black Lives Matter. I mean, in my own work and in connecting with the movement, it's a phrase that I embrace. I understand the definition of it, the need for it. But I've also run into this like pushback, this mm-hmm. resistance. And I don't mean from like the typical people, like reactionary people. I saw like a protest in New York of police saying Blue Lives Matter. I don't mean those people. Mm-hmm. I mean people actually in the black and brown communities and African American community pushing back with this countering, saying, well, all lives matter. And I know it's been hotly debated on social media and everything, mm-hmm. but I think it's worth a discussion right now, because mm-hmm. I think that people are kind of allowing this kind of really backward reaction to the phrase to mm-hmm. kind of take over, as opposed to recognizing that there are black and brown people being shot down in the street, who are being murdered and brutalized, and kind of trying to take the focus away from that fact mm-hmm. by saying, well, all lives matter, as if we think that all lives don't matter.
Yeah, I mean, it's just been a ridiculous debate, and it distracts us. And I think that sometimes I'm almost like a conspiracy theorist, that someone just comes into the movement to make us have these very unnecessary conversations. I'm an Arab American, Palestinian American. I'm a light-skinned girl from South Brooklyn, and I'm very proud to say Black Lives Matter. All lives matter is something that is to be left unsaid, because it's very obvious. Of course all lives matter. We're all God's children. We live in a country that supposedly was started on equality, and all men and women were created equal, and we weren't, and not in this country, and definitely not black people for 450 years. So we need to stop with this all lives matter business and understand that Black Lives Matter is also a mantra that shouldn't be just said by black people. It shouldn't be black people saying Black Lives Matter. It should be everyone, and that's one of the reasons why the movement that I'm in right now is so inspiring, is that the marchers, the 70 marchers that went from New York City all the way down to Washington, D.C., were people of all walks of life. Yes, many of them were black and brown, but there were some folks who were Jewish, who were Muslim, who were Arab American, who marched all the way down proudly saying Black Lives Matter, because it's about us making the conditions for that to be a reality. So we're not just saying Black Lives Matter, we're not just saying a hashtag, but that our brothers and sisters in the black community actually believe and are living every day with their lives valued. So for the folks that with the All Lives Matter business, I debate them all the time, and it comes out much more different from someone like me who's not black, to basically tell people, let's keep the focus, let's not get distracted, because right now we are talking about life and death. This is not a theological or ideological debate. This is people, dead bodies on the ground across the country. In the month of March, 111 people in our country were killed by the police. That's more than police in the UK have killed since 1900. I mean, the magnitude is serious. And that's only the ones we know about, not understanding whether the government actually collects that information in the way that they should be. So let's stick to Black Lives Matter. Let's make Black Lives Matter for real. And then we can talk about other communities and other lives that matter. Because for me, it all ends up with one thing. If black people are free in this country, if black people are safe in this country, then all of us are safe and all of us are free. And that is why I'm committed to this movement as someone who's not a black American, because I truly believe that our liberation is bound up together.
Oh. Now, I know the experience is close, but do you want to offer, I guess, your strongest takeaway from the experience? I know it's still close. You're just getting back to New York, but do you want to offer, the listeners any kind of, not final thoughts, but some maybe strong thoughts about your experience?
I mean, my experience, I've been moved by the, I've been a police reform activist in New York City for 10 years. I came out of a post 9/11 America where my community was targeted heavily by local and federal state law enforcement agencies, men being picked up from their families and taken away for weeks at a time. And I understood that there is a larger problem out there, and the problem can't just be me as a Muslim, as an Arab American fighting for my own community. I had to go find other communities who have been fighting the same oppression for decades, maybe centuries before my community did. And this coalition building of bringing people together has been such a meaningful experience for me. And when Tamika Mallory, my co-chair, said, we're going to march from New York City to Washington, D.C., I was like, are you crazy? She said, you know what, Linda? It's crazy, and I know it sounds drastic, but it's drastic times that require drastic measures. And I asked myself, I said, what am I willing to do for my own community? What am I willing to do for my friends in the black community? And that's what I did, and I took that, and I followed my heart. And I've met some incredible people in my life, but it also reminded me to be humble. But it also reminded me that we can't just be on social media, which is definitely a tool that is to our advantage in 2015, but that we have to remember that those before us didn't have social media, that they marched using their feet, they put their bodies on the line. And I am so honored that I was able to put my body on the line for what I believe in, and in hopes that the next generation after us can say, hey, here's a story in 2015 where young people marched 250 miles, five states, put their bodies on the line, left their jobs and their families. I have three children, 14 and 11 years old, that I left at home in hope that they understand how necessary this was. So it's the whole experience is just overwhelming. As you know, we just ended this journey yesterday, so I'm still a little bit,
right,
I need to reflect a little bit more, and I'm going to write about my experience. But just seeing, and being able to take members of our movement to the mosques and having the Muslim community open their doors to them, and the hospitality and people learning about my faith, was just a very meaningful experience for me to see what true Islam is about. Islam is about justice, and it was a very the whole experience was very moving.
Okay. I've been speaking with Linda Sarsour of the Justice League of New York, who one of the organizers of this awesome March to Justice, which wound up at the West Lawn of the Capitol on Tuesday after they'd marched 250 miles from New York City. And thank you, Linda. Thank you for joining me this morning.
Thank you for having me.
And that will do it for us on Thursday's Community Watch and Comment, the On the Ground edition. A special thanks again to my guest, Linda Sarsour. Thanks to our engineer, Mike Nasella. And thank you so much for listening and calling into your station for Jazz and Justice. You can reach the show at onthegroundshow.org, where you can hear all of our shows our past shows. Please like our Facebook and Twitter pages at On the Ground Show. I promised the D.C. Labor Corps that I'd give them a shout-out about their concert coming up on May 2nd. You can find out more about the concert and even get tickets at laborheritage.org. And that'll be May 2nd at 7:30 p.m. at the First Trinity Lutheran Church on 4th Street Northwest in the district. Now stay tuned for the news, followed by Krista Property on the Thursday edition of Don't Forget the Blues. Raise your voice. Peace.